Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the sun today and tomorrow, because it'll probably be gone for a while after that. Showers and thunderstorms should start on Tuesday night and continue through Thursday night. Days should be in the 50s and nights in the 30s. By the weekend, the sun should have returned with slightly warmer days. This is what my grandmother used to call transition weather. Okay, a word about the wild ones before we go to the news. Now, I know that raccoons are a relatively mundane topic. I can't remember a time when raccoons weren't part of my life in Central Iowa in some way. But over the last weekend, I had an unexpected encounter with a raccoon. I was sitting on a log by the Skunk River on Saturday afternoon, watching the water and communing with nature. There was a bald eagle up in the tree. And when I was happily sitting there, when a raccoon came to fight me, he announced himself with a series of snorts and rushed at me several times. Since then, I have Googled raccoons. The first question I asked is, are raccoons territorial? Now, I've actually gotten conflicting answers to that on the web. Some people say they are, some people say they aren't. So then I looked up, do they attack humans? And this is what I read. The good news is that in many cases, raccoons will back off if confronted by a person. However, there isn't a guarantee. Sometimes raccoons will and can attack people, and this can be dangerous. Generally speaking, raccoons attack in three situations. Number one, when they're cornered. Number two, when they're protecting their young. And number three, when they're sick. Then why do raccoons have a reputation for being menacing? Raccoons behave in such a way that can be intimidating to get out of bad situations. However, the vast majority of the time, they have no intention of standing their ground. Sometimes they will dramatically lunge out in an offensive stance before turning tail and running. They do such a good acting job, though, that many people think a raccoon is going to attack them when all it really wants is to create a disturbance and then find an escape path. As we mentioned above, a raccoon may also attack you if it is sick. More specifically, raccoons with rabies can and will attack humans without being provoked. If you, a family member, or pet has been attacked by a raccoon, it's wise to get medical attention just in case. There are several signs that a raccoon is sick or rabid. These include staggering, not reacting to sudden loud noises, seemingly aimless or wandering around, wet fur on its face, and foaming at the mouth. Now, also, as far as I know, another characteristic is fear of water. It's called hydrophobia. This raccoon was definitely not afraid of water. He came right up to the edge of the water, and he was not foaming at the mouth, and he seemed to be in perfect control of himself. So I don't think he was rabid. So I still was wondering, why did the raccoon attack me? And I think he just didn't want me to be there. I think that was his spot by the water. And I don't think it was a female protecting her babies, because I looked up and they aren't having babies at this time. Well, I won the short-term battle, of course, because I'm bigger. But he kept lurking around in the bushes nearby, so I finally gave up my contemplative spot and moved on, and the raccoon got its spot by the river. Okay, here's Dennis Hart with a roundup of Iowa news.
The strike continues at the John Deere Company in Iowa. Thousands of workers off the job. New redistricting maps are released for the state. Now the question is, will Republicans approve them? And more progress statewide against the coronavirus. All made big news around Iowa last week. First, the strike at the John Deere Company. Negotiators for Deere and the United Auto Workers Union went back to the bargaining table last week, days after union members had gone on strike. About 10,000 employees in Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas went on strike October 14th. Picketing at company sites continued around the clock. But the Deere Company won a temporary injunction last week against strikers at its Davenport plant, keeping them from trespassing on plant property. And U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack visited picketing strikers in Ankeny last Wednesday. Now for those new Iowa redistricting maps. The Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency released a second set of maps, revising Iowa's four congressional districts and legislative boundaries. The new proposal would affect now 2nd District Congresswoman Marionette Miller Meeks, who lives in Wapello County. That county would be put into District 3, the the one represented by Democrat Cindy Axne. The state legislature will meet in special session this coming Thursday to consider the maps. The state Senate rejected the first set of maps earlier this month. It was a party-line vote, with Republicans voting no and Democrats voting yes. Republicans control both houses of the state legislature, so they will make the decision on whether to approve the second set of maps. They cannot change this set. If lawmakers reject them, the Legislative Services Agency will have 35 days to come up with a third set of maps. At that point, lawmakers can make changes. Also last week, word that Iowa Democratic Party Chair Ross Wilburn received multiple threats, including a threat about lynching, after he wrote an opinion piece in the Des Moines Register that was critical of former President Trump. Wilburn is a state House member from Ames, and he is the first black chair of the state's Democratic Party. Ames Police Commander Jason Tuttle confirmed that his department is investigating the threats. Wilburn said he received two threatening phone messages and one threatening email, all of which made reference to what he wrote in the article. The voicemails contained explicit language, including the use of the N-word. Republican Party Chairman Jeff Kaufman expressed support for Wilburn, saying he strongly condemned the racist threats that had been made. In Kaufman's words, "We can have a spirited debate on issues and candidates without threats of violence," and went on to say he hopes those responsible are held accountable for their actions. Also last week, word that Iowa Republican 4th Congressional District incumbent Randy Feenstra said he will run for re-election next year. Feenstra won his first term in office last year, defeating Democrat J.D. Scholten. Meanwhile, there was word that two Iowa political candidates reported raising more than $1 million during the quarter that ended October 15th. They are Democrat Abby Finkenauer, who is running for the Democratic nomination in the race against Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, and 1st Congressional District Republican incumbent Ashley Hinson. Finkenauer, the former 1st District congressperson, raised more money than Senator Grassley did in the last quarter. Grassley raised about $825,000. There was also word that Iowa Republican U.S. Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst had sent a letter to U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, saying they're concerned about the delay in sending $700 million that had been promised to ethanol, biodiesel, and other renewable fuel producers who are still struggling to recover from the collapse of markets during the coronavirus pandemic. The USDA had announced it would provide monetary help to producers within 60 days. Iowa leads the nation in producing ethanol and biodiesel. It's also the biggest U.S. producer of corn and the second biggest grower of soybeans. Ag Secretary Vilsack is a former governor of Iowa. On the coronavirus front last week, word that 100 more people in Iowa had died of the virus. That brought the total number of virus-related deaths in the state to 6,848 since the pandemic started. And this past Friday, the state also reported 6,675 new positive virus tests over the past week. That brings the total number of positive tests to more than 517,000 since the pandemic started. The state's positivity rate went down from 8.3% to 8.2%. 29 long-term care facilities in Iowa were said to have coronavirus outbreaks. The number of people hospitalized with the virus also went down, 557 to 526. 72% of those hospitalized are not vaccinated. Meanwhile, there was word that Iowans hoping to get another coronavirus shot would not have to scramble for appointments the way they had to last winter. Iowa has a big vaccine supply. All this after action late last week by two federal agencies that let Americans get a free booster shot of all three coronavirus vaccines, and let Americans choose to mix and match their vaccines if they want. Meanwhile, Governor Kim Reynolds said last week that she's talking with state lawmakers about trying to block the federal government if the Biden administration follows through on plans to require most workers in companies with more than 100 employees to be vaccinated or to undergo regular testing for the coronavirus. It's not clear what would happen if Iowa lawmakers passed a law barring employer vaccination mandates if that law conflicts with federal orders. Still on the health front last week, word that a new study shows that Iowa is the fourth highest state in the nation when it comes to having children under the age of 6 who have detectable levels of lead in their blood. 76% of children under 6 in Iowa have that. Federal officials say no level of lead is safe for children. In another story, Iowa Auditor Rob Sand issued a report last week that says the privatization of Medicaid in the state has resulted in an 891% increase in members being illegally denied services or care. In 2016, Iowa transitioned its Medicaid members from a fee-for-service system administered by the Iowa Department of Human Services to a system managed by private managed care organizations in exchange for a fee. There was also word that Governor Reynolds had announced a new unemployment management system last week. She said starting next year, Iowa Workforce Development, the state agency that handles jobless claims, would assign caseworkers to jobless claimants as they search for new work. And those claimants will have to search for 4 new jobs a week, rather than the currently mandated 2 jobs. In northeast Iowa, a state trooper died after he crashed his squad car while responding to a call. 37-year-old Ted Benda was responding to a call to assist the Clayton County Sheriff's Office with a wanted suspect when he was involved in a single-vehicle crash on Iowa Highway 51, 6 miles north of Postville. On the jobs front in Iowa, word last week that the state's jobless rate fell slightly in September, dropping from 4.1% to 4%. At the same time, there was confirmation that TPI Composites in Newton would lay off 710 workers. There was also a report that thousands of Iowans who use propane to heat their homes could expect to see dramatically higher prices this winter because of the low supply of propane, strong global demand, and a forecast for a colder winter. But at the same time, the National Weather Service said much of the nation, including the southeastern part of Iowa, is likely to see warmer-than-average conditions this winter. If those stories sound contradictory to you, well, you're not alone. There was also word last week that a prominent protest leader in Des Moines had been sentenced to probation and 150 hours of community service after pleading guilty to damaging a police vehicle during a protest last year. 26-year-old Mate Farrakhan Mohammed of Des Moines had been charged with vandalizing a police car during a protest at a Hy-Vee store in Des Moines. Mohammed had helped organize protests throughout Des Moines after the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police last year. On the health front, a report last week that Hy-Vee was warning customers that some onions sold between August 13th and September 1st are part of a federal recall. The only affected products sold at Hy-Vee were 3-pound bags of yellow onions, which are no longer available at the stores. On the Well, We Can Be Proud of That list, Ames, Iowa City, and Des Moines were all ranked among the nation's 100 best places to live, according to a study conducted by Livability.com. In the wild world of college football in Iowa this past weekend, Iowa State University defeated Oklahoma State 24-21. The University of Northern Iowa defeated South Dakota State 26-17. The University of Iowa had the weekend off, and so did Drake University. But Drake's time off came because its game was canceled when coronavirus issues sprang up with Drake personnel. And under league rules, that meant Drake forfeited the game it did not play. And that's your summary of the past week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'll be back here tonight at 7 on KHOI's Capital Week when Laura Bellin and I will talk about politics Iowa style and what's been going on that affects all of us. But before I go, I want to say a few words about Ursula Rudenberg, who is hosting this broadcast for the last time today and who is leaving KHOI. Ursula played a mighty role in getting this station on the air years ago, and she's played a giant role in keeping it on the air. And for that, this community owes her a big debt of gratitude. And I do as well, because Ursula persuaded me 5 years ago to do some newscasts on local talk. So here I've been, twice a week since then, pounding out 4,000 words every week of news about Ames and about Iowa, a total of, believe it or not, 1 million words or so since we started all this. It's been fun. So I owe Ursula about 1 million thanks, but I only have time for this one. Thank you, Ursula. I know you have many more new adventures to come in your already adventurous life, and I know you'll make them happen. I wish you nothing but the very best in whatever you decide to do. Godspeed, and may the wind be always at your back. Thank you.
And that's the Pat Metheny Group with The Last Train Home. This is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. And thank you, Dennis, for your kind words. Our collaboration on Local Talk has been a pleasure and an honor from day one. I have learned so much from you and have enjoyed you so much, Dennis, and you've added a lot of value, so much value to Local Talk. So thank you. And of course, you can hear Dennis Hart this evening at 7 p.m. when he and Laura Bellin will bring you the latest news and analysis on government with Capital Week at 7 p.m. Right now, though, I'm going to steal Laura away for a few minutes to join us here on Local Talk to talk about the worker strike at John Deere that is in progress. Laura, welcome to Local Talk. Dennis touched on the strike in his newscast. You were able to record a conversation in Ankeny, I think, with J.D. Neal, spokesperson on behalf of the UAW strikers. UAW is the United Automobile, Aerospace, and Agricultural Implement Workers of America. So tell us about this interview and how it came about, and tell us who J.D. Neal is.
Yes, so George Clark and I had gone up to Ankeny with the goal of speaking to people on the picket line, and George got there first and quickly learned that the UAW is discouraging the rank and file members on the line from talking directly to the media. And we were recommended to go to the UAW hall and speak to someone who was authorized to talk about the contract talks. J.D. Neal is one of the people in the leadership of the UAW Local 450. They represent the workers in the Ankeny area. Deere has about 6,000, between 6,000 and 6,500 employees in Iowa, mainly at four facilities in Waterloo. That's the largest: Dubuque, Davenport, and Ankeny, and so forth, and Ottumwa. Of course, they all have their separate UAW chapters. And so anyway, we were able to speak to J.D. Neal. This was before, as you just heard Dennis say at the top of the hour, that the two sides are back at the negotiating table. That happened a couple of days after I recorded this interview with J.D. Neal. But in any case, the main issues at the heart of the strike remain the same.
Is there a picket line in Ankeny?
Yes, the UAW is organizing round-the-clock pickets at all of the locations. As Dennis mentioned, the company has tried to get injunctions to limit the size of those, how many people can be there. And the first one that they were able to successfully get was in Davenport. So the strikers can only have four people on the line. They can't have any chairs. They can't have open burn barrels. Burn barrels were already banned under an Ankeny ordinance, so they haven't been using those in Ankeny. They're using donated propane heaters. But in any case, the company is trying to limit the very visible presence of strikers. And of course, the UAW is wants to keep as many people out there as possible. And from what I've been told, certainly true the day that we were there, and I've been told that by people who have been out on the line, that they're getting a lot of support from the cars honking, passing by. I just saw somebody posted yesterday, they were out in Davenport, and the people they talked to with the UAW chapter said that a lot of local restaurants are supporting them. They're either they have a special deal available for the workers on strike, or they're sometimes sending food down to the people on the line. So the UAW says that they're getting a lot of community support.
Okay, well, let's listen to that interview with J.D. Neal, who is spokesperson for the UAW strikers.
J.D., can you first explain sort of what you've mentioned, that you can speak generally about the strike and what led to the concerns that led to the strike?
Yeah, you know, there's only certain things I can talk about, you know, and we feel that what John Deere put out in front of us wasn't fair, mm-hmm. and we're fighting to receive what's fair, and not just for us, but for the labor movement in general. This isn't just about us, it's about the Americans out there, middle class working Americans. So we're fighting for us right now, but we're also fighting for everybody else.
Why do you think, I mean, the vote was really overwhelming, 90% to reject the contract. It seems like it's hard to get 90% of any large group of people to agree on anything. Why do you think it was such an overwhelming vote?
I think this time it was overwhelming because we, as the local here around Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, we're showing what strength in numbers is about. So, you know, to see a 90% no, I believe that's a strong statement saying that the working class is tired of corporate greed and the corporations padding their pockets and not sharing mm-hmm. what's owed.
The last strike at John Deere lasted a little more than 5 months. Do you have any thoughts, or does UAW have any expectations on how long are you prepared to take this fight?
You know, we have no idea how long it's going to last. I know that we're prepared and ready to stand strong as long as it takes.
Mm-hmm. And is it true that the company is cutting the people on strike off from health care and later this month?
Yes.
And so does UAW have a fund that's going to cover people's health care?
Yes.
For the duration of the strike?
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts about that? Deere has had some of the salaried employees working on the floor. Do you have any thoughts about that, how feasible it is, or, I mean, whether it's right for the people to be doing jobs they weren't trained for?
Yeah. Good luck. Mm-hmm. That's what I can say. Mm-hmm. It's good luck. That's good luck.
And how do you feel about the community support that you've been getting since Thursday?
The community support here in the Des Moines area and Iowa in general has been overwhelming. We haven't really reached out to anybody personally. It's just people seeing, you know, that we're on strike, and it's very heartwarming to know that we have such a great community supporting us. We've had donations. We have a small pantry in there. It just grew big time this morning with locals from out of state coming up to support us, and water, hot meals, clothes, toiletries. Anything that anybody in our local needs while we're on strike, you know, they can come down here and hopefully we can take care of them. We'll always have a hot meal or something to eat for everybody.
Do you have pickets going round the clock, or what hours are you picketing?
24/7.
And are you scheduling shifts, or people are just coming when they can, when they're able?
We're scheduling shifts, and then obviously throughout the day and night, people come on their own because, you know, we voted no for a reason. We didn't vote for a vacation.
The weather's going to get colder here soon.
Absolutely.
You plan to continue with around the clock?
We will continue around the clock, obviously keeping safety of our members firsthand, but that's part of our donations. People have been bringing us propane tanks, and because we can't have an open burn barrel, you know, within Ankeny limits, and that's understandable. So we're putting portable propane heaters out there, and people have been dropping off propane tanks, and they're willing to come back and fill them back up for us so our members can stay warm and stay safe.
Have you been following the news coverage of the strike?
Very little.
It was just because I was going to ask if there was anything you feel was missing from the media coverage that you haven't.
No, I don't think so. You know, I think the media coverage has been pretty fair from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. Right? So I haven't paid attention to everything out there. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I would hope that people know that we're not the greedy ones. We want a fair wage. We want to be able to retire someday with a pension to be able to continue to pay our bills. We want to be able to send our kids to school, help our kids pay for school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the work that we do between welding, machinists, assemblers, forklift drivers, all around, you know, it's hard work that takes a toll on the body. And, you know, if we don't have anything when we retire, you know, what good are we going to be to our families and to the community that we're going to give back to because they've been so great with us?
So Deere has had since 1997 these two-tier contracts, so the long-term workers get a better deal than the new hires.
Yes.
And in the past, those contracts have been approved. But what do you think changed that people aren't willing to agree to a contract that's a lot worse for the newer hires nowadays?
Because people are starting to understand that that benefits the company. That does not benefit the workers.
Do you mind asking, were you here when the 2015 contract?
Yeah. I've been with John Deere and Local 450 for 17 years.
Uh-huh. And was there already like some underlying discontent at that time even?
Yes.
And why do you think that that didn't get to the point that it has this year?
Why did the...
I mean, in 2015, why were people willing to? Because that's what I've heard
it was,
well, that there was a lot of unhappiness about the
It
contract.
Was. The last contract passed by less than 200 votes. Mm-hmm. So it was very close the last time, and I think the people that voted no or yes last time, I think they paid attention this time, and the results were over 90% across the UAW deer chain.
Now, you mentioned at the beginning that you're limited in what you can say. I mean, is there a reason why UAW is wanting to limit what is said to the media?
Because we don't know mm-hmm. what's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not going to give any information that we're not 100% sure on. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what I can tell you is we're 100% sure that the contract they gave us was not satisfactory. And we won't go back to work, and we won't cross that line until we get something that is.
And what do you feel, if there's one thing that you would say your members need that they haven't been getting the last few days, what would that be?
You know, that's a hard question to answer, because right now we're so new at this. Mm-hmm. This is what, day four? Mm-hmm. So right now we're getting everything we need. As this continues in a month, 2 months from now, if we're still out there, you know, that answer could be way different.
How many members of your local were working at Deere when the 1986 strike happened?
I have no idea.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah,
it's
I don't
been a
know.
Long time. This is the biggest strike in Iowa in decades.
Decades. Yes. Yes, it is.
I got a question, though.
Yeah.
I'm particularly concerned with the inequity situation that you cited, and to help people understand the union's position right now, the fact that you were deemed essential workers during the pandemic, the fact that the stock prices for Deere soared, the fact that your CEO got a 160% pay increase in 2020 alone, can you speak to how that factored into the decision to go on the strike?
It pissed us off. 100%. You called me essential. We came to work every single day. We continue to make you millions. Not millions, billions of dollars. You know, you say you want to give us 5 to 6% up front. It's a slap in the face.
How much extra work were your members taking on during the pandemic? How many extra, were you working 6 day weeks?
It would depend. Uh-huh. Okay. Some people would work 5 day weeks. Some people would work up to 7 days. And did we take on extra? Damn right we did. People were out sick. And we couldn't come to work. If we sneezed, they'd send us home. So somebody had to pick up the slack. And that was the people that were able to be there. And we did that. So, yeah. It was something, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything I didn't ask that you think is important for us to know?
You know, just continue to support. You know that the people out there walking the line, we're not the bad guys. We're just hard-working, middle-class people that want a fair wage and, you know, a benefit package to, you know, live our lives. We don't want to live in mansions or buy a Lamborghini or anything like that. So that's what I say, just continued support.
And you feel that there's a lot of solidarity within the UAW, or are there people unhappy with what's going on?
I would say in the 17 years that I've been active in the UAW, this is the most solidarity, the strongest solidarity I've seen yet. And outside of Deere, I know that the UAW around the nation will support this. Our international is going to support it. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident that we're pretty strong right now.
And if you've just joined us, you've been listening to an interview recorded by Laura Bellin, KHY reporter and author of the blog Bleeding Heartland, recorded with J.D. Neal, who is a spokesperson for the UAW union strikers at the John Deere plant. They were speaking in Ankeny. Laura, can you briefly just explain what the workers are asking for? Why are they striking?
Sure. J.D. Neal didn't want to talk in a lot of detail, but there has been other coverage that's explained the crux of the issue. So the two main points are pay and benefits. That's common in a lot of labor contract disputes. And the pay issue is that John Deere offered workers a dollar an hour raise with a small additional raise in 2023 and 2025. It would work out to a 5 or 6% raise for most of the union labor. And this is when the company's stock price tripled during the pandemic, as was mentioned during that interview. The CEO, his pay was increased 160% from 2019 to 2020. And the company is very profitable. They're doing very well. So there's a strong feeling in the UAW that they need to share the wealth, that workers stepped up. They took on extra load during the pandemic. And it's time for the company to pay them closer to what they owe. Of course, I mean, the value of the company is in the equipment that's put together by these contract workers. So that is one big issue. Pensions are another issue. The UAW, since 1997, John Deere has had what are called two-tier contracts. This is a very common divide-and-conquer strategy that corporations have used over the years to get unions to accept contracts that over time diminish benefits. So they say the longer-term employees get a better deal, and then the new hires after a certain point, after the contract goes into effect, they get a much worse deal. And this has been going on at Deere for a long time, since every contract negotiated since 1997. But at this point, there are very few workers who are still employed at Deere who haven't retired, who are getting those really great pre-1997 benefits. And the latest contract proposal would have had basically no pension at all for the new hires. Going forward, they would have had more like a 401k plan. That involves a lot more risk for the worker. And so the UAW wants more of a guaranteed pension. And as was mentioned briefly during that interview, and I don't remember hearing about this in 2015, but the UAW was very close to rejecting the contract on offer in 2015. That was only accepted by a margin of less than 200 votes. And so, as I mentioned, over time, as the people who benefit from these two-tier contracts, there are fewer and fewer of them in the workforce, and then more people who have been hired with the inferior pay and benefit structure. There's just a growing feeling that this is not something in the union's interest going forward to agree to that. So those are the two main issues: the wages and the pension. I did want to mention, because in the interview we talked about how Deere was going to be cutting the workers off from healthcare on October 27th, and just on Friday, the company did a reversal on that. They put out a statement saying that, as a gesture of good faith, basically they were going to continue to pay for the healthcare of the UAW members who are now on strike. So that's an expense that the union won't have to carry. There are still a lot of expenses involved with a strike like this. The UAW has a fund that pays strike pay to its members, but it's not really close to what they would be earning if they were back on the job. And that's why J.D. Neal mentioned that they're offering food, toiletries, other supplies for people who want to come down to the union halls, because the last big strike at Deere lasted for a little more than 5 months. And that can involve real hardship for families if this strike were to go on for anything like that length of time.
That's right. Well, thank you, Laura. Thanks for bringing us the voice of somebody on the ground there and kind of giving us a sense of who the strikers are and what they're going through. I've been speaking with Laura Bellin, who is KHY's reporter in Des Moines and author of the blog Bleeding Heartland. More can be heard from Laura when she joins Dennis Hart tonight at 7 p.m. for Capital Week on our weekly report on Iowa government. Thank you, Laura. Appreciate it.
Well, and thank you, Ursula. And thank you also, as Dennis said, for giving Dennis and me a chance to do that Capital Week program. It's been really enjoyable.
It's been an honor to work with you, Laura. And this is Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. When I was younger than 5 years old, my family got together with another family, with kids our own age, to spend a few weeks camping at Backbone State Park in eastern Iowa. Those days in the park were some of my earliest memories of complete happiness. They are forever magical to me. Entrepreneur Matt Scott in Ankeny has built a business by connecting to that magic and understanding how many of us feel in these parks. I met Matt at the Ames Downtown Farmers Market a few weeks ago, where he had a booth, and I was really charmed by what he was doing. So I was able to reach him by telephone and ask him about his unique business called Iowa Parklands. Take a listen.
I've been intrigued by the outdoors ever since I was a kid. My father and mom had a large sailboat, so our whole family could sleep there on the weekend. So we were outside in the boat almost every single weekend for years and piqued my interest in nature and wanting to be outside. Sailing wasn't quite my thing. I kind of wanted to find my own niche, so I gravitated toward hiking. So I decided to see where I could do that in Iowa at great length, and I realized Iowa's parks had some pretty extensive trail systems. And upon doing that, I was looking for maps to traverse some of these trails. And, you know, I wanted to hike every trail in the park and kind of wanted to know what I was in for before I went. And was a little frustrated trying to find some maps that were accurate. Just really couldn't find anything I was satisfied with. So I got to think, well, maybe I could do my own. I did a couple of those with my own GPS and posted some of that data online for other people to use, and they were well received, and they wanted to know more about the trails, so I would start to write blog posts about them, and it just kind of grew from that, honestly.
Matt, you're an Iowan?
Uh-huh, yeah, in Ankeny. I moved here, I think, around 1970 in third grade, Des Moines before that, yeah.
And you still live in Ankeny, right?
Correct, yep.
I read on your website that the business you have called Iowa Parklands is a blend of your interests in design, fitness, and outdoor places in Iowa.
Yeah, several interests that kind of combined into this hobby and now a small business.
Are you a graphic artist?
Yeah, I went to Iowa State for graphic design and received a BFA in graphic design there. I was an exhibit designer for about 14 years. Then I was an illustrator for a publishing company, woodworking magazines, and a web developer. And now I'm a technical illustrator on my day job.
So if I understand correctly, you then really made the maps that you sell on Iowa Parklands.
Yeah, I hike the trails with a GPS, and then I bring that GPS data home and overlay it onto an open source street map. The reason for that is so that I can find all the roads and ponds and just other land features. And then I take that composite and trace it in a software package and create the maps. I'll typically create a color map and a black and white map at the same time. With the color maps, I format as 8.5 by 11 so that I sell printable downloads on my site.
If you go on your website, this is what I see. I see that there's bandanas, there's maps, posters, stickers, playing cards, and then there's information about parks, and there's blogs, which kind of hone in on an intimate look on some park or some object in a park or some animal or some aspect of Iowa parks that are interesting to explore.
Right. Bandanas, honestly, were something I created to be purely utilitarian, you know, just a bulletproof map. I've used all types of maps, including, you know, digital ones on my phone. Those just don't really do it for me. I mean, they are helpful at times, but I honestly like to see something spread out in front of me when it comes to maps. It's good for other people to gather around and you know, talk about and look at a route.
If you go hiking or biking, you can put the map on your head, right, and wear it until you need it?
Yeah, you can wear it, or a lot of times, folding a map is always kind of a hassle, so these you can simply just kind of wad up and stuff in your pocket quickly, or any number of things. One of the things I didn't realize, though, like I said, I kind of did it as a purely utilitarian type thing, but as I started selling it as a product, there's a real emotional attachment for people to these parks that kind of took me by surprise. lots of stories of people getting engaged at our park or married there or had family reunions or, you know, their great grandfather helped manage the park or, you know, just all endless types of stories that I never even thought about. And so a lot of people just get the bandana just to have a physical piece of the park that, you know, they have a connection to.
You make a point on the website of saying that you are not with the Department of Natural Resources. So apparently that's a question that you get asked a lot, or people think that you may be doing that. Do you have to have any special permissions to make money off of parks, or is there really no prohibitions against building a business around the park system?
I contacted the DNR. I spoke to one of the lawyers there and told them that I was going to be doing this as a for-profit business, and that was what they had mentioned, is just don't pose. It's fine, just don't pose as the DNR. And mm-hmm. So I made a point of putting that on my site. You know, I get a lot of emails, you know, people asking questions about the DNR. I may know the answer, but I always state that, you know, I'm not affiliated with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, but you can find information on the DNR site.
Can imagine people would call you up for tourist information too, right?
Yeah, lots. A lot of people coming through town.
On the website, you can download and print the maps for a small cost, right?
Yeah, in addition to the bandana, I have some download maps. They're in color, which is kind of nice. You know, they're just as accurate as the bandanas as well.
Would you say that maps are really the foundation of your business?
Yeah, they are. I continue to work on different angles on the maps. You know, Iowa's trails aren't honestly as big as, you know, the Rocky Mountain National Park, but people still want to try and find extensive trail systems in Iowa. Lots of equestrian people and hikers, backpackers, you can do all of that stuff. There are places. This helps expose people to where those are. Honestly, I didn't realize how unique each park was until I started going to them. You know, there's like the Mines of Spain. I call that kind of like Iowa's Grand Canyon. There's a large gorge there. I mean, no one told me about it. I didn't know that was there. It was so enjoyable to stumble across that.
Where is it?
It's right south of Dubuque, right on the Mississippi River. It's beautiful up there. And it's one of the newer recreation area, actually, and the preserve, I believe.
It has hiking trails?
Yeah, that's extensive hiking trails, anywhere from prairie hikes to lush forest hikes.
And what's it called again?
Mines of Spain.
Mines of Spain.
Yeah,
wow.
They used to mine lead up there, I guess.
Uh-huh. The Meskwaki Indian used to have mines in that area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the Les Hills reminds me of Iowa's Rocky Mountains, you know. And I kind of see the state of Iowa as a composite of all the things in the nation, but it's all in the state. We've got our own little versions of it, it feels like.
The mission of your business is to help people find parks and enjoy them based on what they are looking for, right? To kind of discover what's available.
Yeah. Exactly. So what I'm working towards is like a trail guide, like a small booklet for different parks that have different purposes, like equestrian riding or mountain biking or hiking or backpacking. It's kind of tough for me to like wait till I get all of them to start releasing books. So I'll probably start off with something like almost all of the larger systems, something like Iowa's Great Trail, you know, hiking trails like that.
Okay, so now your business also has posters.
Yeah, I've got a poster that I offer that shows all of the state parks, state recreation areas, major state forests, minor state forests, and county managed state park. So yeah, those are places that people might want to go. It's essentially all of the state-owned property, excluding the preserves. And it's just kind of fun to look at those. I get a lot of people to just stand and study it. You can see how big your favorite park is compared to others. And
are most of the clients Iowans?
Or expatriates, too. I mean, I sell items to people, really in any state in the country over the years that I've been doing this. They used to live here is usually the story.
There's a lot of sentimental value to it.
Again, back to the emotional connections. It didn't even occur to me that that would be a reason for driving people's interest in some of these things. But now I kind of focus on that a little more now.
I'm talking with Matt Scott, who owns a business called Iowa Parklands. I encountered you in the Ames Downtown Farmers Market.
Right. That was the last show, was last Saturday.
So you're not going to be there anymore because the farmers market is over. But I was very charmed. Can you describe a little bit the kind of responses you get when you show your work like that?
I think we stand out a little bit in a market like that. How did you think of this? And I've had people send me texts from the campground talking about how their day was. I mean, I guess they felt compelled to get a hold of me quickly and tell me that, yeah, we just spent the day at Brushy Creek and, you know, we're by the campfire now looking at the map trying to figure out where we're going to go tomorrow. So that kind of stuff is really fun to hear, and I'm glad people are using it. And
it sounds like they feel connected to you. They want to report back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, honestly, I'm just a guy who's hiked the parks with the GPS. I don't have any special knowledge or considering myself, you know, expert in much of anything, honestly. But I end up striking these conversations with people at the shows and whatnot, and we end up talking for many minutes, many times, you know. Usually at the end of the show, I'll find someone who's a hardcore hiker or something, and, you know, we'll end up talking there well past the show's over.
So at the end of the day, the thing that connects you to your clients really is that love of hiking or biking or riding through a park.
And, you know, some of the people, too, that just have an emotional connection, I don't know, they just really want a piece of something that has such a strong place in their heart. I mean, I guess everyone does. I remember family reunions at Jester Park in Polk County. And
yeah.
Or even a city park, you know. There's people that have gatherings or play place at a city park. You just have fond memories of a special little place of nature.
That's right. You're really a person who is following their passion with this.
Yeah, I never thought I would enjoy running a business. I would never have told you I would enjoy doing that before, but that's just been a huge thrill for me.
Matt Scott owns a business called Iowa Parklands. It's a very beautiful website. And then there's a section where you have kind of an index of parks.
Those are the ones that I've visited and done. I mean, I started out doing write-ups of the entire park. And my goal there was to kind of, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet, but it never really satisfied me when I was trying to find out specifically about the hiking trails. So I thought I would just write a description about the hiking trails, like every trail of every, you know, the parks I go to. So those are the parks that I've been to, and it's just an ongoing project. I just keep adding to them every year. So as I'm running the business, I try to leave a little time. We'll go out and hit some parks. So I'm trying to get about 4 to 5 parks in a year. I also do county parks. Story County has some fantastic parks. Polk County has some beautiful, well-maintained and parks, too. So I'm really intrigued by some of the county parks, too, that I would like to put on my bucket list.
Do you go usually to a park by yourself?
You know, for the trail mapping, I have a hard time finding anyone who wants to come with me because it's a lot of drudgery, honestly. It's just putting in the miles, and lots of times. So if I have 20 miles of trails, I'll probably end up doing a third more of that, just because some of the trails might go in one way, and so I have to go back the other way. I end up hiking more miles to do that, and it's kind of in and out. And a lot of times there's all kinds of little connector trails that aren't on the maps, and so I try to do all of those so my map is completely accurate. Kind of hard to find someone who wants to do every single trail with me and then maybe do them twice because you have to go in and out.
So you have a very detailed approach to the parks, a detail-oriented approach.
Yeah.
Matt, would you share memories that you treasure from being in an Iowa park?
You know, I love stumbling across like an old stone bridge in the middle of what seems to be nowhere. And I think about the people who built that, and now it's just kind of out in the middle of nowhere and with the trees growing around it, or, you know, that canyon I stumbled on in Mines of Spain, or any interesting feature, or just a tree that might arch across the trail just so that it makes like a little tunnel. I just have to stop and look at those things. It's kind of the mini explorer in me that loves to constantly keep hiking and looking for little things like that.
Surprising discoveries.
Yeah, and there's lots of them. You know, the Grand Canyon is awesome, but you can find little surprises in all the parks.
I wanted to ask you about the blogs, too.
What I really like is I get comments from time to time that help fill in the gaps. I was able to get information about Ledges State Park, which explains and talks about this old homestead site with a chimney that's backed by the campground. A relative who had a farmstead there mentioned on the comments in that post and just gave me some history about the family. That was so interesting. So I'd like to do more posting just because it just increases the conversation about the parks, and I learned something too when people give feedback.
Well, thank you so much for sharing just a little bit, a description of what you're doing. And you're hoping to eventually really live from this?
I mean, it seems like it's something that could happen for sure.
Do you think you would ever have like a brick and mortar storefront store?
Probably not. I work with several boutiques and stores, and if anything, I'd probably up my wholesale account.
I'm speaking with Matt Scott, and he's the owner of a business called iowaparklands.com, mostly about maps, but it kind of branches out from there into the love of the parks, really, which is what the maps represent, right? How to go there and have an experience. Now, we forgot to mention the stickers.
Yeah, the stickers are just on a whim, and they have been so popular, especially people seem to want to collect all the parks, and so I've got many more of those coming. The bird stickers have been wildly successful. I have got a huge list of different birds that people have requested that I'm going to try and get at, and those have been popular not only in Iowa, but they're not really married to any state necessarily. I mean, they have a wide range. I sell those all over the country, which really surprised me. I don't usually target my social media throughout the country, just usually to Iowa, and people find it, though.
Oh, and then you have playing cards, too. It's a deck of cards that has different parks on it, right?
Yeah, I was able to creatively make it work out that there were 54 state parks. That was perfect for a deck of cards with the two jokers. And what my thought was is that, you know, that's what we always did as kids and a family is we'd play cards on a rainy day in the camper.
It keeps it culturally consistent.
Right, exactly. That seems to be what people want to do with them, too. So.
Well, okay. How does one find your work?
I am on Facebook, Instagram, and iowaparklands.com. You can find everything off that site. Also, I show at events, and I post those on the website under the contact tab.
And on Facebook and Instagram, it's Iowa Parklands?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's been really enjoyable to learn a little bit about what this is all about and how it came about. And I'll give you the kind of the last word. What would you say?
Well, I would just like people to maybe try and get out to the parks if they can and support the efforts to help fund them and possibly even purchase more land for parks. I like to support Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. They've got a worthy goal to constantly grow the natural places and preserve some of Iowa's as it was.
Thank you so much, Matt Scott with Iowa Parklands, and thanks for taking a little bit of time. And I have to say that when I'm looking at your website, I already feel more inspired about being an Iowan. I'm going to use your website as a resource for sure. On the surface, Iowa doesn't necessarily look like an area with a lot of recreation, and yet there is, right?
There really is. There really is. Just get out there, and it's all there.
Thanks for helping me to appreciate Iowa.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And this has been Local Talk. Thank you for listening. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Be sure to tune in at 7 p.m. tonight for Capital Week, and stay tuned now for Headline News and Democracy Now! Local Talk was engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Mike. The theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards. You also heard The Last Train Home by Pat Metheny Group and Home by Philip Phillips. Dennis Hart mentioned at the beginning of this hour that this will be my last installment of Local Talk and that I'll be leaving KHOI at the end of this week. It has been a pleasure and honor to build KHOI with many others, to manage KHOI in its first phase of existence, and to create Local Talk and to be one of its hosts. It would be impossible to describe with words how great the pleasure and honor has been for me. Local Talk was a promise to be made good on when we went on the air. In order to raise funds to build KHOI, we promised that we would bring local radio back to Ames and give a community voice. Local Talk was started the minute KHOI went on the air. It was among the first number of shows that we started with, and it was conceived as the living room of the radio station where the community is welcomed and listened to, regardless of whether we as individuals agreed what people said or not. Local Talk has always been produced through teamwork and collaboration between many people, and the door has always been open and hopefully will continue to be for anyone who wants to join the team. it really has been a tradition of real collaboration, and I'm really proud of that. My favorite thing about Local Talk has been learning so much about what people are doing, how much the animals are doing, what the plants and the natural world are doing all around me where I live in central Iowa. I just had no idea, and it has really opened my eyes and given me humility and respect and really deep love for all of that. So finally, as you may know, when we sign off at the end of this show, we say thank you for listening, and remember, you are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. You may not know how literally true that is when we say that. You may have come on Local Talk yourself to share something, or may do so in the future. And the fact is that the fact that you listen is what makes us really able to do this. You are why we make telephone calls during the week to set up interviews, why we go out with recorders, prepare scripts late into the night before, and why we get up early in the morning. The fact is that you listen, and that is why we do this. So remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening.